Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora everybody, I'm Jordan, host of the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. It's my hope that you find support and comfort in these stories, and I'm really looking forward to bringing you today's episode. Just a reminder before we get started that these are personal experiences and you should always seek medical advice before making any important decisions. I'm not an advocate for any particular model of birth or birth care, and this is simply a platform to share these empowering Kiwi birth tales with you all.
In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Becca, and Becca takes us through her first pregnancy and birth. In Becca's story, she discusses polycystic ovarian syndrome and how she thought that might impact her on her journey to pregnancy, and then actually falling pregnant quite quickly after coming off contraception. At the end of 35 weeks, Becca noticed a decrease in her baby's movement, so she talked with her midwife and had quite a few scans booked in from there. They did a Doppler check a few days later, and it showed a decrease in blood supply from the placenta, so they were induced the next day. As part of this, we were also in level 4 lockdown in New Zealand because of COVID-19, so Becca takes us through what that experience was like. Obviously quite different to the birth that she had envisaged initially, and no one could have expected that that's where we would have been. It was quite early on in the lockdown. So Becca talks through her lockdown birth experience and what that was like for them afterwards, and how that sort of impacted introducing the baby to family and how they could stay at the hospital and the birth centre and all those types of things. So I think it's a really relevant story given that a lot of places around the world at the moment are still in a version of lockdown. And I do hope that if you are a mum or a dad listening to this story and you're expecting a baby really soon and you are concerned or anxious around lockdown, that this story will help you because you're able to hear someone else's experience and hear them come out the other side. So I'm really looking forward to bringing you this story. I will let Becca talk you through the details and let's jump into it. Hey Becca, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who's in your family?
Yes, of course. So I have myself, Becca, my husband, Joel, and our 11-month-old son, Oscar.
Awesome. Very cool. And what part of New Zealand are you from?
We're in South Auckland in Pukekohe.
Awesome. Very cool. And What was the journey like to pregnancy for you guys?
It was pretty good. I got diagnosed when I was 14 with polycystic ovaries.
Yeah.
So I actually spent probably a lot of my kind of teenage years, coming to terms with what that meant and what that meant for my lifestyle. And probably a lot of that time also thinking that it mightn't be the easiest for me to get pregnant. Mm. So when my husband and I kind of decided that we would like to start trying, we kind of did the whole, maybe we should come off the pill, because I'd been on that for about 12 years because of my PCOS.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what my normal cycle was or anything like that. So we thought we'll come off everything, and it could take a year. We may not be able to do it naturally. So we thought we'll just see what happens. And Murphy's Law, it happened on the second month. So we were very, very fortunate. And I think back to all of those years of having that worry in the back of my head. Mm. But yeah, we were lucky enough that it was an easier ride this time round than we kind of had expected.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Yeah. And how did you find out that you were pregnant? Did you have any early symptoms or miss a period, or what was that like?
Yeah, so because I'd kind of just come off the pill and everything like that, I had no idea what my normal cycle was like or anything like that. My first period off the pill, so the first month, it was very, very short. And it was quite like spotting. And then the second month, I didn't get it on the Monday as I thought I would. And I got really, really excited, and all my family kind of said to me, just relax, like it's very unlikely. And I managed to hold off on that Monday. And then on the Tuesday, I couldn't hold off any longer, and I got a test, and I just did it at home and had a quick look at it, and there was only one line. So, oh, okay, you know, I didn't think much of it. Popped, chucked it in the rubbish bin. And then later that night, I was cleaning out the rubbish, and there were two lines. So I hadn't waited long enough to have it, because I really didn't think that it would have been the case.
Yeah.
So it took a long time to actually convince myself that that I was pregnant. And even when I went to the doctors and kind of did the blood tests and stuff, it took quite a bit to believe, really. But so yeah, that's kind of how we found out. And I didn't feel too bad at all, really. I think I've been quite lucky. I probably throughout that first trimester had just a lot of the kind of morning sickness of feeling like I was hungover or just a little bit car sick, just all the time. And I'm a high school teacher, so that was a bit hard at times, but luckily enough I never was really sick enough to vomit or anything like that. So I was really fortunate.
Yeah, awesome. I can definitely relate on that hungover car sickness feeling. It makes me cringe just talking about it.
It's so unfair. It was like the hangover without the joys of drinking. I was like,
Cool. And did you choose to go with a midwife for your pregnancy, or what was your plan there?
Yeah, I did. To be honest, I didn't really think too much between a midwife and an obstetrician. I know my sister had shared care. And I jumped on the midwife register, and already at that point, and I was only probably about 6 weeks pregnant when I started looking, a lot of the midwives in my area were already booked. So I kind of did a bit of a panic and had a look, and I was trying to find someone that would go up to the hospital if I needed to.
Yeah.
Because at that point I was undecided if I wanted a hospital birth or a at one of the birthing centres.
Yeah.
So I wanted somebody who wouldn't, so I wouldn't be handed over, who would come with me. So that was a big contributing factor to my decision. But yeah, managed to find a lovely midwife, and so that's kind of how we went down that track.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And what was the rest of your pregnancy experience like? Did you do sort of all the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you find out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so we did all the normal testing, and I think my midwife, because of the polycystic ovaries, she got me to do the 2-hour glucose test straight away.
Yeah.
So instead of doing the 1 hour and then going back, so we did all of that, and that all came back fine, which polycystic ovaries, your chance of having gestational diabetes is a little bit higher.
Okay.
So that was a nice kind of in the clear there. And then, at our 20-week scan, we got the sonographer to write down on a piece of paper, but we're pretty sure we heard a bit of a slip of the tongue. so we weren't overly surprised, but we did a cake with the rest of our family, and that was a nice way to find out with everybody else.
Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. And did you do any antenatal classes or birth classes or any sort of, educational stuff before your labour?
Yeah, so my husband and I went to, I think it was over about 6 weeks at night from about 7 till 9, I think, just at one of our local kindergartens running through the parent centre.
Yeah.
We went to a group there, and that was, I know people have some really differing experiences, and I think I'm so pleased that we did go. I'm being a high school teacher, if I want to find something out, I'm big into research, and I wanted to know everything that I could, and I listened to your podcast because I felt that knowledge was power and all of that, whereas my husband wasn't so so much, and I think that's just probably from a different point of view.
He
didn't think like that.
Yeah.
So the antenatal classes were amazing for him, not necessarily at the time, because I still think I had to drag him along a wee bit, but it meant that when things popped up later on, he had a little bit of knowledge, so it wasn't quite so out of the blue.
Yeah.
And it also was quite good. It got us talking about certain things. Like we'd always go home and have discussions about what we wanted or what our views were, that we probably maybe wouldn't have thought about until later in the pregnancy. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice. And did you have much of a birth plan or sort of thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go as a result of that, or as a result of, I guess, conversations between you and your husband?
Yeah, we didn't have too much of a plan, and knowing that things never tend to go the way you want, I've always thought before I was pregnant, I'm a big sook, not very good with pain. So I was always very much on the side of get me to hospital as soon as possible and give me all the drugs as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But then kind of as we progressed through the pregnancy, I started to kind of think about what my other options were. And I'd kind of come to the discussions with my midwife about labouring at the birthing unit, which was about 30, you know, it was 2 minutes from our house. It was so close. And then going up to hospital if necessary.
Yeah.
She kind of had she told me that, you know, things really go wrong all of a sudden. And that if things weren't looking great, that she would, you know, make that decision nice and early and get us up to hospital. I think my bigger panic was feeling, if I got to a point where I wanted an epidural and feeling like I couldn't have one, feeling panicked by that. And that was probably my biggest fear. So I kind of I started looking into hypnobirthing, and your course wasn't out yet. And I did it very, probably not as in depth as I would like to next time.
Yeah.
But I found that was quite helpful in at least getting me to consider, trying to labor, you know, at the birthing unit first.
Awesome, nice. And I guess your baby is 11 months old now, so if I think back to where the country was 11 months ago, that means that you had a level 4 lockdown birth.
I had a level four baby.
Yeah. So do you want to talk us through, I guess, the final few weeks of your pregnancy and how, I guess, maybe your care changed going from a COVID sort of free New Zealand to all of a sudden into a level 4 lockdown? What was that like in those end stages of your pregnancy?
Yeah, it was quite terrifying. Yeah. But I think at that point too that it was so new for the whole world. Nobody really knew what we were in for. And I think, now I look back and I kind of think I don't know how we coped quite as well as we did. But so the first thing was that the last two sessions of our antenatal course was done online, because that's when things started to, you know, hit the fan. But at around 35 weeks, so this was a couple of weeks before lockdown, his movements started to change. So I'm a PE teacher and I'm on my feet a lot during the day, so I often didn't feel him. But in the evenings, I'd feel him quite a lot. And one night, his movements, they didn't stop, they just decreased a bit. And that's the one thing that your midwives tell you until they're blue in the face, like, if anything changes, please, like, don't hesitate to call us. We'd rather you come in and we have a look and it be nothing than, you know, anything else. So I kind of had my midwife's voice ringing through my head, and I was like, oh, I'll just flick her a message. And because we were so close to the maternity unit, she got us to pop down and she monitored us. He had something that was a sleepy trace for about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started to kind of come right, but that initiated her wanting to send us for another scan. So I think about a week later after that, we had another scan, and his abdomen hadn't grown very much from the previous, which initiated another scan, which was about a week and a half later, and his abdomen hadn't grown at all in that time. So that's when things started to, you know, they just started to think about what could be the causes. And we had a Doppler scan on the 26th. So we went into lockdown on the Wednesday, the 25th. We had a scan on the 26th. And then the following week on the Monday, we had the Doppler scan where they looked at the blood flow, and it was starting to decrease. he wasn't getting as much as he should have. So our midwife phoned us up and said, you're going to be induced tomorrow. So that was, yeah, about 4 days, 5 days into lockdown. Yeah. And that was, it's one of those things when we were at the antenatal classes, one of the women, she was being induced because she had gestational diabetes. And for some reason in my mind, I'm kind of going, oh, well, I don't have gestational diabetes. I'm not going to be induced. So I don't really, I kind of zoned out from the induction chat. And now I'm kind of going, oh, crap. Like, so I had to kind of look into a lot of it. But yeah, so because of that, we had to be induced on the Tuesday. So my husband couldn't come with me to the scan. Mm-hmm. It was all on my own, which started to get a little bit, it was starting to get really quite creepy because it was like this big elephant in the room that was COVID and nobody really knew how to deal with it or, so wasn't able to come to my scan. And then it was really unsure of knowing what we were going to be allowed or who was going to be allowed there on the induction. And we ended up getting told that it would just be my husband and myself. So my mum and my sister, who had hoped to be there, couldn't. So it was just my husband and I. And once we got into the ward, we couldn't leave the room. So normally when you're induced, you can kind of get up and move around and sometimes even leave hospital. Unfortunately, we were confined to our room. So, yeah, that was the beginning of kind of where COVID started to really hit us at that point.
Yeah, right. And do you want to take us through, I guess, the rest of your sort of induction story and into your labour, if it ended up starting, and how you progressed from there?
Yeah, so we were induced on Tuesday the 31st. So they, about 12 o'clock we got there. They did the balloon method and 4 p.m. and the doctor, as she was doing it, said that if she was a betting woman, that she would expect it needed to be a good 24 hours to have it in. There was no, my cervix was not at all ready. So that was, I didn't feel that my body was ready for labouring or anything.
Not overly encouraging, is it?
No. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then, it was not the most comfortable experience. And like I said, I'm not great with pain. So I was sucking really hard on that gas already. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not even labouring. I'm on the gas. Like, so hard. So at that point, I was quite pleased that I was in hospital. So we had the balloon inserted, and that's where they fill it up to try and gently open your cervix, because we were looking to be about 13-14 days early, and Oscar was measuring quite small. They say it's a slightly softer method of inducing rather than the drip, so that's why they went with that one. So we kind of had that in overnight, and it's started kind of contracting. It still felt really false, and it pushed on my bowel and my bladder, and it was quite uncomfortable for most of the night. So we did that, and then, my waters were broken at about 1 p.m. on the Wednesday, and we laboured pretty much throughout the Wednesday night. At about 4 o'clock on the Wednesday, we had one of the doctors doing their rounds come in and ask me if I was considering getting an epidural. And at that point, the contractions were just starting to ramp up, but they still weren't that bad. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm super open to an epidural. And they kind of suggested that if I was open to it, that it mightn't be the worst idea, just in case they did have to do an emergency C-section, that the line was already in. So that was pretty much all I needed to convince me. I was like, yep, sure. And so they popped that in. I don't local very well. So local anaesthetic doesn't work beautifully on me. So that also wasn't super comfortable. But like the anaesthetist said, it was a lot more comfortable than full-on labour would have been. So So yeah, we got that done, and I hadn't realised how uncomfortable I had been at the later stages of my pregnancy until I couldn't feel my body. And I was like, oh, this is what it feels like not to be pregnant. Yeah. It was a huge relief. I've got some back issues, so I hadn't realised the toll that it had taken on me until I couldn't feel anything. So that was quite quite an interesting feeling. So yeah, we laboured out throughout Wednesday night, and it was really interesting. We had a chat going with my mum and sister because that was the best way to keep them involved, and I'm really close with them, so it was really hard not having them around. And you know, they kept kind of messaging us, asking us for updates, and now when I talked to them, they said, you know, that they were starting to get really concerned by that point on Wednesday night, that kind of hadn't progressed and that baby's heart rate was still quite erratic. So yeah, we'd kind of we slept on and off, and then on Thursday morning at about, I think it was about 9:30, I was about 9.5 centimeters dilated, but I did have a slight lip, and I tried pushing about 3 times, and in that time baby's heart rate just started to tank. So they said pretty quickly that they were going to take me through to theatre and look at either doing an instrumental delivery or a C-section.
Yeah.
And at that point I was so tired. I honestly probably could have slept through it.
Yeah.
I was so knackered by that point. It was the strangest feeling, like being told that you're really close to meeting your baby, and I could barely keep my eyes open. So yeah, they were taking us through to theatre, and as much as it was an emergency, they were amazing at keeping me calm, and my husband, and you know, had said that if it had been a true emergency of getting him out really, really quickly, he would have been out by now. But the entire team in the theatre were just incredible, which made life so much easier. So, yeah, and I don't know if you've ever heard people say that having a – well, you've had a C-section as well, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's like people doing the dishes in your tummy.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it.
It was – so much like that. Like, you can definitely feel it. It's not painful at all, but it's not it's not gentle. So it was the most strangest feeling, and yeah, so my husband was able to be in the theatre with us, which was at that point we didn't know kind of what was going to be allowed or not, so we were really lucky. And different DHBs had different kind of regulations at that point, only a weekend. So the other thing we were quite lucky was that he was able to be there while I was induced, because a lot of DHBs wouldn't let the significant other come in until you were in established labour. So we were quite fortunate that that wasn't the case with us. So that was one really big positive thing. So then, yeah. And then our little Oscar was born, 5 pounds, 13. And yeah, he was perfect, cried straight away. And it was, yeah, an incredible experience.
Yeah. Amazing. And so there were no real issues with his abdomen once he was born?
No, nothing, nothing wrong, just that he was little. He had stopped growing and getting the nutrients that he'd needed. And that was the deciding factor to get him out, that he no longer was getting what he needed from me, and that in fact, that the placenta wasn't doing its job properly. So he was little, he was 11 days early, and but yeah, he passed all of his tests and things like that. He did the heel prick to check his, I think it's his blood sugars. He was very close to being put into the NICU because of how borderline he was. I was lucky, I was able to express quite a bit of colostrum.
Oh, awesome.
Which I think kept him out. But that was quite a tough experience, kind of having your child pricked many times.
Yeah, I can relate, because Jai was the opposite end. He was big, so they were pricking him, and I wished so badly that I had antenatal colostrum there, because I think we would have avoided the NICU as well.
Yeah. And it was still pretty grueling. You had nurses kind of coming up and milking you with a syringe, and there was nothing gentle about it. And I mean, at the end of the day, we wanted to get the colostrum for bubs. So it was what it needed to be. But that was kind of the only implication really of his size. So once we got out of theatre, we went down to recovery. I was there for, I think, about 20 minutes. And then we got taken up to our ward. And that's when my husband was told that he only had 15 minutes and then he had to get out. And that was probably the hardest aspect of the entire birth, was basically my husband being given the most amazing gift in the world and told he had a time limit of 15 minutes and then he had to go. And they were really strict with that. And I, it was hard to come to terms with, because you're like, well, he's been here. He's been here for the whole time. And they kind of talked about it being about changing of shifts and things like that. And new work is coming on and new staff. But it was kind of that idea of, well, whatever I've got, he's got, kind of thing. So it was a hard pill to swallow. I've never seen him look so heartbroken. So that was really horrible. And then of course, having had a C-section, there was no one there to support me. So when baby cried, I'd call for the nurses and things and the midwives, but they were very short staffed. So it was very, very lonely first night. And of course you had people coming in and checking all your vitals and things like that, but they never seemed to be there when the baby was crying and you were picking it up. So that was really hard. But I mean, because he was our firstborn, we didn't really have anything to compare it to. So some ways, sometimes I think that that's quite a positive thing. I didn't know what it was like to have support there. I sometimes think it might have been harder if you had a baby before and known what it was like to have people with you that whole time.
That makes sense. And how long did you end up having to spend in the hospital?
So I got out of there as soon as I could. I was like to the midwife, what do I need to do to get out? And she talked about, passing the wind, and I think it was about 500 mils of urine that I had to pass over a certain time. So I was drinking so much water. I was doing everything I could to get out of there. My entire modesty was out the window with kind of, everything about that. So I ended up staying one night. So he was born at 10:47 on the second, and I managed to leave kind of the afternoon of the third. And my husband was able to pick me up and transfer me to the maternity unit. So that was the only way I was allowed out of hospital after one night, was by going to the unit. And I wouldn't have not wanted to have done that either, being my first baby. I had no idea what I was doing. So, my husband got to kind of see bub between Middlemore and the maternity unit. And then unfortunately, he wasn't allowed in there at all either. So I had to pass us over again at the door, which was, it seems insane, really. And I know that was a huge contributing factor for me leaving the unit earlier as well. Was to try and get home to him. My milk hadn't completely come in. And I remember when I was looking at everything I needed for baby, I was quite lucky that I was very obsessive, maybe was the right word, and had mostly everything I needed. Because everything was closed. The only thing I didn't want to buy was a breast pump, because I didn't know whether I'd be able to breastfeed. I didn't want to outlay that money. And then at the unit, kind of wanting to go home and my milk not fully in, I was needing to pump a lot. And we couldn't just go to the store and buy one. So we were very fortunate that we had an incredible neighbour who lent us her pump. And that meant that I could go home.
Awesome. And how did you find going home? Obviously you're taking your newborn baby home, and your husband's been probably desperately waiting for you guys to arrive, and obviously with your milk coming in, lots of hormone changes. So how did you find those first few days and weeks?
Yeah, it was really strange. And that was the silver lining to COVID for us as well, was my husband had originally decided to take a week off.
Yeah.
But because of COVID, he couldn't work. So we had pretty much 3.5 weeks with him, not even longer, I think. So we were incredibly lucky to have that. I can't imagine many people would have that opportunity. So that was a huge silver lining for us. But it was really strange. And of course, not having my family there, and mum was doing our food shopping for us. So she would drop it off on the deck and look through the ranch slider. And that was just not the way I'd ever expected to introduce my son to his grandma or his nana. So that was really tough. But again, we knew nothing else. And it did mean that we had to solely rely on one another. I think I was fairly lucky with the baby blues. Definitely, I think it was about night 3 for me. Everything kind of hit home. But I was fortunate enough that I had quite a good milk supply. Oscar wasn't very good at latching. We used a nipple shield until he was about 2 months, 2.5 months, and then we managed to keep going until about 3.5, but he'd always pull off screaming and arching his back. So at that point, the rest of my family kind of strongly suggested that I've done my best. So that was the end of our breastfeeding journey there, which was really hard pill to swallow, having had so much milk. I had it there for him, he just couldn't access it for whatever reason. So he had tongue tie and lip tie as well.
And how did you find your physical recovery from your C-section?
Not too bad. I was quite surprised, really. I definitely missed the beds at the maternity unit, which you could kind of like push a button and it would help you sit up. It wasn't until I got home that I realised how useful those were, because that was the hardest part, was just kind of turning and rolling to grab them from the bassinet to do the night feeds. But again, because it was lockdown, there wasn't a lot on, we weren't going out doing very much. So I was forced to really relax. And I had that help at home too, to be able to do that.
Yeah, awesome. And what sort of things, I guess, if you reflect back on it now and think about doing that time, obviously without the support from your family, and just with you and your husband, can you think of anything that sort of helped you to get through that period? And I guess the relevance in New Zealand at the moment is that Auckland's in level 3 lockdown, which I know is slightly different to level 4, but still restrictive of who you have in your bubble and obviously who visits you and your baby. So I'd be really keen to know a little bit more about that.
I think for me it was going through the different emotions and really riding that wave and being really disappointed, allowing myself to feel that. And I think that was important, because then I went in kind of having gotten all of that out, not trying to just brush it aside. And we all were so disappointed. The internet's a great tool. I said, we had a Facebook group set up, and actually now I can go back, and that Facebook group reminds me of every single little moment of his birth, because we were going back and forward so much. Just be kind to yourselves. It's an incredible time to have a baby. And at the end of the day, you're the one who needs to be safe in your environment for your birth. And however you can do that in these circumstances, don't be afraid to ask. I think for me, sometimes I should have pushed a little bit more, maybe when his heart rate kind of wouldn't have kept continuing to fluctuate, and my mum has messaged me going, you know, look, this doesn't sound right to me. And if she'd been there, she probably would have said that herself. But I didn't want to rock the boat. Anything like that. So just be the biggest advocate for the birth that the best version of your birth that you can have. And I, you know, my heart goes out to everyone who it's just so uncertain, and that's the hardest part, not really knowing, because you can get told one thing and then turn up and it be different. So just be kind to yourself and
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that you would like to include in your story about your pregnancy or your birth or your postpartum period?
I think just for me, it was a big part for me too, was that breastfeeding and the tongue tie and the lip tie. It took a long time to for us to identify that. And I had no problems with formula or anything like that, but it was that big bond, the step away from that, that I found really hard, or I thought was going to be really hard. Going to formula changed nothing in terms of actually my bond with my baby. So that's, I think, a really important thing to kind of highlight. And the other best thing that we did for our boy was we went and saw a chiropractor. Who specializes in babies, and she was amazing. He would only ever, he couldn't turn his neck, and we think that that was because he spent so long being smashed around in the birth canal and his heart rate, so he couldn't turn his head to the right, so she helped release a lot of those muscles and things like that, and that was another really helpful thing that in that postpartum period for him. So
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Becca, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I think, yeah, like I said, super relevant timing at the moment. And it's always really interesting to hear a story about a birth during COVID, because one day we'll look back on these stories and just think, what the heck? But I'm super grateful that you've come on the podcast and shared your experiences with us. So thank you.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. And if you are one of the mums out there who are currently in a version of lockdown and feeling anxious about your lockdown birth, I do hope that this has provided you some comfort in hearing someone else's story. And just know that you are going to be amazing no matter what level of lockdown you are in at the moment. And yeah, I just wish you all the best for your birth experiences. Thanks again for tuning in this week. I'm looking forward to bringing you another awesome episode next week, and I will talk to you then.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.